Welcome to Let's Talk Land, a weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about land and farms, buying and selling, ownership, and especially for real estate agents and realtors. Learn from the experts. Free land education. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm an accredited land consultant with United Country Real Estate Sutton Properties, which is a new name for our company, along with my co-host, Teresa Martin. Hey, Teresa.
Hey, Lou.
One of our agents in our firm. And buying and selling homes, land or farms in western Piedmont, North Carolina, or southern Virginia, just give us a shout. We'll help you out. Our new office is at 102 East Main Street, next to BB&T Bank in downtown Pilot Mountain, North Carolina. Make a note of our changes, and our company's new website is www.allsuttonproperties.com. Just a program note, Dr. Barbie Ask the Doctor Show will follow this show and will air at 10 a.m. So stay tuned. Dr. Barbie always has good stuff. Our guest today is Steve Brewer. Welcome, Steven.
Hey, good to be with you guys.
Calling from Des Moines, Iowa, right?
You got it. It's the heart of the country.
It's one of the best cities in the world. President of People's Company, we're going to talk about the history of this incredible organization you guys have built and some of the unique things that you've done. And the support, and you've got a conference that you have every year, and written some white papers we're going to get into, and we're just going to have a really good show. People's Company is recognized as land transaction advisory firm that offers land management, land appraisal, land investment services in 22 states across the country, and we'll name those here in a second. Under Stephen's leadership, People's Company has transformed from a regional brokerage firm to a one-stop shop of savvy landowners and top-tier investors. The affiliate company Steve leads has become sector leaders in the agricultural finance, real estate development, land and farm management, and investment strategies. He is known for the actively pursuing projects that resolve complex issues and meeting building consumers' demands. Recent projects include revitalization of rural communities through the development of affordable housing, authority of foundation white papers on social responsibility farmland investments, developing organic production and land transition systems, and leading the development of a new agri-hood community. What's an agri-hood community, Steve?
Yeah, an agri-hood is, think of a golf course community, but it's instead of a golf course, you've got a working farm in the middle of your subdivision, and the folks that live in the community work and volunteer and enjoy the farming amenities just like you would a golf course.
Wow. Is this something new, or is this something that's around the country, or what's the germ of that?
Yeah, there's about 200 agri-hoods around the country now. It's a movement that started, gosh, about 20 years ago. In fact, I think one of the first in the country was in Atlanta, an agri-hood called Serenbee, and Urban Land Institute has actually authored a white paper on this recently, and there's a map on their website that shows where these are. Our agri-hood's the first one in Iowa, and I've had an opportunity to tour several of them around the country, and really, really, really neat model. It's a trend with consumer connecting with food and wanting to know where their food comes from. It's a trend that I think is going to continue to pop up, and you're going to see more of them.
Love it. This is good stuff. You've also been recognized for several honors, including the highly competitive National Auctioneer Association in 2018 Auction Marketing Campaign of the Year. What was that campaign about?
Yeah, we handled the sale of a 6,000-acre asset in Walla Walla, Washington. Recognized for that campaign. Farmland LP and Organic Land Fund out of San Francisco bought that. And the property was actually a dryland wheat farm that its highest and best use was going to be to develop it into wine grapes and apples and hops and blueberries. And so our challenge was to position that future use of the land and find a buyer who could see that vision and execute on that vision. So, and in addition to that, we actually just found out a couple weeks ago the National Auctioneer Association just recognized our firm for the marketing campaign of the year again last year. For an 8,000-acre sale that we handled in South Dakota.
Wow. What was that project about?
It was a pasture farm, cattle ranch that another broker in our firm handled. But 8,000 acres, all contiguous. We handled it as a multi-parcel auction, And so bidders could bid on any particular piece or in any combination or on the entire tract. So a pretty unique sale.
You're also recognized by the Realtors Land Institute, which I've been a member since 1998, I believe, is when I joined. We started what's called the Apex Awards. And you guys were one of the top 20 producers that was given a partnership award and also featured in the Land Report, which is our feature sponsor. And by the way, I'll be having them on our show here next month, the Land Report. So,
oh, great. You got Eric coming in, or who's yours?
Eric's going to come. So, again, as part of building this educational show that we have and reaching out to all the people that are the support areas and companies like yours, Stephen. And anyway, you serve on numerous industry boards, including the Iowa Chapter of Natural Conservancy Board of Trustees and the UNA Real Estate Program Advisory Council. What is that? What's the UNA Real Estate Program Advisory Council?
Yeah, so that's my alma mater, the University of Northern Iowa, and they've got one of the only accredited real estate programs in the country where you can get a degree in real estate, and most of the students there also get a degree in finance as well. And so when you graduate from college there, then that helps you bypass a lot of the requirements to get your real estate license and your appraisal license.
Sure.
So pretty unique program, and it's an opportunity for me to go back and serve my university. And we actually have about a dozen UNI real estate students working in our organization now.
Terrific. That's an incredible school out there. How much did they get into land education? You know, that's my pet peeve. You know, we talk about, I think I'm the only land instructor in the United States that has a C class on the subject of land, other than the Realtors Land Institute. I mean, did they really get into syllabus?
You brought up a sore subject for me. I go to those meetings, and it's all commercial guys and residential folks, and I'm the lone person on the advisory board that has a land, emphasis. This is an interesting note for you to think about. But please. In Iowa, where my home state is, if you look up the assessed valuation of all commercial real estate in Iowa, there's $141 billion worth of residential real estate. If you look up the assessed valuation of commercial, there's $36 billion. And we have $224 billion worth of farmland. And so I go to those meetings telling these guys, hey, this is an agriculture state, and the commercial and the residential we have is a result of the agricultural business that we have, and we really need to spend more time educating people on farmland and agriculture. And I say that every meeting, and every meeting I have to keep saying it because we don't change. But it's a pet peeve for sure.
Yeah, Teresa knows I've been fighting this for over 20 years. It's not to be braggadocious, but I'm the one that got the four-letter word land included in our Code of Ethics Article 11. I started the process in 2008 at NAR through RLI, and of course it went to the Professional Standards Group, which authorizes it, and the Board of Directors signed off on it in San Diego at the National Convention. So land is now finally recognized as a specialty in our industry.
I didn't realize that was your effort.
Well, like I said, I'm not trying to brag about it, but I've done a lot of stuff, to help, and this show's part of it. And you're going to help me, too, help spread the word, get this thing out there. You're also on the Iowa Soil and Water Future Task Force. Well, tell us about that. You chair that board.
Yeah, so in Iowa, about 4 or 5 years ago, the Des Moines Water Works, which is the largest water utility in Iowa, filed a lawsuit against some drainage districts for high nitrate levels in the water that they had to remove from the water that they were treating. And so pretty controversial lawsuit. It kind of pitted the urban folks against rural folks in our state, and ended up being kind of a nasty battle. And so this task force was formed to help develop recommendations for the legislature on what could be done from the a state perspective to solve some of these challenges. And Iowa soils they're some of the most productive soils in the world, but they're high in organic matter. And when you add drainage tile to our high organic matter soils and you apply nitrogen to them, inevitably that allows nitrate to get in your water. And then the water utilities have to remove that before they sell that water to their customers. So anyhow, I got involved in leading that task force, and we brought together the environmental groups with the agricultural groups, and We spent a couple years developing recommendations on how we could clean up Iowa's waterways, and so it was a major project, and the lawsuit's since gone away, and the state has funded a really significant program to help with cover crops and bioreactors and saturated buffers and some of those practices that help remove nitrates from our water.
Good for you. And I'm sure, how long did that take? How long was that process?
Well, it's one of those lifelong sentences, it feels like, as I continue to get drug into other water quality initiatives. But that particular task force, that was probably about an 18-month process from start to finish. But it's one of those things that, you know, I'll continue to stay involved with. We learned so much and met so many people. And, you know, and I was one of the folks that, you know, we manage farmland, and so you deal with these water issues in terms of adding drainage tile and the realities of how people look at that. And so I think I'm sentenced permanently to this water quality effort.
Understand. Worthy cause there. Now your family is from Iowa. You have a family farm. You used to grow corn, soybeans, and then you got an organic products under the Middlebrook Organics label. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so my give you a little more color than you're asking for. My grandpa growing up had the Ford New Holland farm equipment dealership, and my folks had a Pioneer hybrid seed corn dealership, and my mom and dad and brother farm together. They farm about 4,000 acres just south of Des Moines, corn and soybean operation. And so I grew up very much involved in agriculture and helping out on the farm and whatnot. And when I went off to college, I had this passion for real estate. Of course, you know, I wanted Dad to buy every farm that came up for sale, and of course he didn't. And that's really how I got into the real estate business. But my brother took over the family farm, so he still farms today. And he farms farms that we manage and farms that I own personally. And I go down there for, you know, to get involved once in a while. But the nice thing is when something breaks, I can leave and get out of there. So I'm still involved, but not as much as my brother would be. This organic thing, the Middlebrook Organics, as part of this agrihood, we hired an organic farmer out of Minnesota to come in and start our farm. And so we've got about 500 acres in this agrihood. And we just this year got kicked off the first community garden, and we're creating this Middlebrook Organics label to brand the products that will come out of this agrihood.
What are you growing?
Right now, this is our first year, so we're growing sweet corn, pumpkins, tomatoes, watermelons, just your roadside food stand type of stuff. And it's very much a small-scale operation, but you know, in our farm management business and on our investment business, we're working on a lot of larger-scale organic projects. We have 1,000 acres of organic corn and soybeans and rice in Arkansas, and we're growing some cereal grains on some organic farms up in Minnesota. And so I have a feeling that this Middlebrook label is going to continue to expand beyond what we're doing in the agrihood.
Lots of luck on that. That's quite a great project you're doing. We're seeing that around the company as I interview people from around the United States and actually from around the world. This organic thing is really catching on, and it's a good thing for all of us. Just the last thing.
The price premiums on organics, it's 2 to 3 times what you can get on conventional, and it's really the first time that the consumers cared where their food comes from, and they're actually willing to pay more for it. So
absolutely,
it's an exciting thing for farmers.
Absolutely. With just about a minute left here, you're a member of the Realtors Land Institute. So you're one of the, I believe there's 1,300 of us, and you don't have your ALC yet, right?
I do not. Not enough hours in the day, unfortunately.
I understand.
But it's on the list.
Well, you might could fast track that with your education and take 3 of the 6 required courses and look into that if you haven't. You're also the Iowa Commercial Real Estate Association, the Iowa Association of Realtors, and the National Association of Realtors, and the National Auctioneers Association. So you're a busy fella.
I have no problem killing time. I don't know if I get anything accomplished, but we can kill time better than anybody.
Well, thank you for your volunteer and your contributions. I'm on several boards and Commercial Forums Committee. We just had a meeting and a few other things. So you get back and you get back, right? So our guest today is Stephen Brewer. This is Let's Talk Land.
Hey, I was just sitting here looking at my notes, and it says that you guys are involved in People's Company, and that it started in the 1960s. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
So People's Company, it started out as the farm management department for a bank called People's Bank back in the 1960s. And there's a bank merger in 1972, long before I was born. But we were spun out of the bank in 72 during that bank merger. And if you'd follow the original People's Bank charter through history, it ultimately ended up being part of Regions Bank. So we've been independent of the bank since 1972. There's still some People's Banks around that we get confused with. But we've got a long history and have been independent for quite some time. And we were ran as kind of a mom-and-pop real estate business from 72 to 2002. The two gentlemen that were at the bank came over to the new co and ran that. And one of them managed farms and one of them sold farms. And they both had incredibly successful careers. But they sold the business to us in 2002. And that's when we really started to grow the firm.
Yeah, I see in 2008 you started a land investment expo.
Yeah, that's a cornerstone marketing event that we started hosting. It started out, it's kind of funny, we rented a hotel and hired an MC and said, hey, let's host this event dedicated to talking about farmland. And in the first year, we called it the Iowa Land Investment Expo. And, we gave out tickets to our friends and family and begged people to show up. And we had about 300 people show up to the first event. And that event every year, we just continue to ramp it up, and we get higher caliber people, and we get higher caliber speakers. And last year we had 900 attendees, and we've just had some incredible keynote speakers through the years. We had Boone Pickens in. We had Donald Trump the year he announced he was going to run for president speak. We had Kevin O'Leary a couple years ago from Shark Tank. Last year we had Martha Stewart. And so we've tried to bring in speakers that you otherwise maybe haven't had an opportunity to hear, but also are relevant to agriculture and their household names as keynotes. And then we build out a series of breakout sessions and other speakers throughout the day and have exhibitor booths. And I think last year we had people from over 30 states there and four or five different countries. And we get a lot of national media there, and it's turned into a really exceptional conference.
Yeah, those are some big names. Everybody knows those folks. Let's see.
Yeah, we work really hard at it. We're trying to figure out. It gets harder every year to figure out, like I said, that household name and somebody who's relevant to agriculture. But we're working on next year's program right now.
Perfect. I'll see if I can't put that on my calendar and attend next year. And that the next expo is on your website. Tell us about that and the dates and who's coming.
Yeah, so in Iowa, we're the first in the nation caucus status, and so first week in February is when the caucuses are, and we're kind of struggling to schedule our event around all those caucus-related activities, and so we believe our date is going to get moved from the original proposed date to January 13th and 14th. We're firming that up as we speak now, but if you want to get more information and stay updated, there's a website called landinvestmentexpo.com that you can go and get additional details and watch some of the presentations from past speakers.
Who's going to be your speakers that's so far slated?
We don't have any of those keynote speakers slated yet, because
okay,
we got to get that date firmed up and whatnot.
Gotcha.
So we're in the very early stages of planning the 2020 event.
Understand. So watch that. This is... it's almost like our land conference. We hold that every year, and I'm sure you've been to one of those. I know Molly Zaver, your vice president, that's how I got to you, was at our Albuquerque land conference. We'll be in San Antonio this early spring coming up next year for our 20th land conference for the Realtors Land Institute. I just want to talk.
The thing that's interesting about our event, we attend a lot of major, in fact, I think People's Company exhibits at about 40 trade shows throughout the year. And this one's unique in that you get such a cross-section of people. We've got a lot of Realtors Land Institute members here, a lot of American Society of Farm Managers members here, lot of farmers, but then a lot of institutional capital that comes in, and a lot of the national media and academics and bankers, and so it's a really interesting cross section of people, and it's fun when you see a New York investment banker sitting at the table with an Iowa farmer striking up a conversation, and they both learn so much from each other.
And I'm sure there's a lot of business transacted during that meeting too.
There is. I hear about it all year long, and you know, you kind of wonder, well, how come I didn't get myself in the middle of that transaction?
Where's the referral fee? Yeah, where's the referral fee, right?
That's right. In the room, in the deal.
There you go. A little bit about your company too. You're in, and I wanted to mention these states for our listening audience, especially if you live there. You should know about your company. If not, we're going to tell them about it today. But you're in Alabama, Arkansas, you're in Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Minnesota, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, North Dakota, Oregon, South Dakota, Washington, and Wisconsin. How many agents in your organization?
We've got about 60 folks in our organization. About half of those are real estate agents, and then the other half are appraisers and managers and then staff. So the way we operate it, our home office is here in Iowa. In fact, we've got a few offices here in Iowa. And then we bought an appraisal firm up in Michigan, Marlette, Michigan, last year. And then we've got a real estate office up in Walla Walla, Washington that we acquired. And we service a lot of this out of Iowa. We're constantly on an airplane flying around to work on these deals. So in Iowa, I'd call it a very much a retail presence where we're selling a lot of 80s and 40s and 160s and 320s. And right. When we get involved in deals outside of Iowa, they're usually larger and more complicated. And it's a little different framework than where we're operating in our home state.
Of your agents, how many members of the Realtors Land Institute?
You know, that's something that we did that's kind of unique. We a few years ago, when we set this up, we said, okay, our appraisers are appraisers. They're not going to do brokerage work, and they're not going to do management work. Our managers are managers only. They're not going to do brokerage work or appraisal work, and our realtors are realtors only. And so we require everybody who's got a real estate license with us to become a member of the Realtors Land Institute.
Good for you.
So, yeah, it was a kind of a bold move at the time, but in retrospect, we're focused 100% on agricultural properties, and so we like to make sure that if you're doing a transaction with us, you've got the most capable, best person you can on the job. So it was a big commitment, but we're really thankful we made it.
No, thank you for doing that. How many ALCs do you have, like me? Do you know?
There's probably about four or five that are ALCs right now. There's several that are working on it. But we certainly encourage that.
Yeah, I'll be teaching the Land 101 class. I've been doing that since 2003, and I'll be in Tulsa, Oklahoma in September. So see if you can send me a few students. I want to fill that class up. I'm doing that through the Oklahoma RLI chapter. So
we'll certainly encourage that.
Yeah, please, and it's a new format. I haven't taught it yet. I'm going to be teaching it in Charleston, South Carolina, on the 23rd and 24th. We've got the ALC convention. I hope some of your ALCs join us in Charleston here coming up next month. And and one in Asheville, North Carolina, in the fall. So
You're picking the right neighborhoods to host meetings.
Yeah, definitely. They're prime areas for sure. All right, let's talk a little bit more about your company. Your rural heritage ties your land and core of business and holds true premises is off your website, that everything starts with land. Well, you know, from the ground up, as I say, terra firma. It is the premise that with global perspective, People's Company built innovative real estate solutions into our vision, mission, and core values. You do about $220 billion worth of farmland here just in Iowa. That's quite a portfolio. Massive asset class, depending on wealth transfer. You know, everything's changing. All these websites that are coming out, I've interviewed most of them, these ag sites that are coming out, the technology, the soils, the plant engineering. You know, we've got a lot more people coming on this planet. And like when I was talking to our buddy Alexandria in Brazil, they're actually in an area that allows them to grow two crops in one season. They do soy, and then they'll do corn. And in our conversation, he mentioned that there was only one other place in the world that two crops could be done in one season, and that's somewhere in Asia, southern Asia. So, but we're all concerned about not only the quality of the food, but also our environment, and also, being able to feed the population. It's quite a challenge, and we all got to be attuned to this. But the shows that we've done have been fascinating on the techniques and the things. And, you know, it seems like that your organization, People's Company, you're kind of putting all that together, too, not only the minutia of, marketing and selling and appraising and managing, but you guys are also getting more involved, too, like other companies in the science and the technology, right?
Yeah, we really are. We're big believers that farmland's one of the last places of arbitrage in the world, and that there's a lot of advancements. Technology is going to allow people to do a lot of great things in agriculture, and we're just scratching the surface on it. And a lot of this is driven by our investment clients. We've got folks that allocate money to buy farmland with us, and we'll do the due diligence work and the acquisition work and the ongoing management work for them. And they're looking to deploy cutting-edge practices on the farms that we manage for them. And so we're constantly looking around the corner at what's next, whether it's the organic front or it's, recently with, USDA allowing industrial hemp to be legalized. It's alternative crops, just getting more efficient with how we farm. There's a lot of great ways to add value, and so we're trying to put ourselves right in the middle of that stuff. And you mentioned some of these companies. I was in Champaign, Illinois yesterday, where Acre Value has their Midwest office, and they're digitizing all the landowner records. And I've only been in the real estate business for 16 years, but I remember when I first got in the business, you forget there was no Google Earth.
Nope.
There was no Acre data to go pull soil maps and FSA maps digitally. We didn't have drones to go pop up over the farm. And, you think about where we're at today, where you can pull up comps on Acre Value. You can pull up land valuations on Acre Value. There's online farmland leasing platforms. You can order drone footage and satellite imagery remotely. And it really expands your footprint. Where we used to maybe, our industry folks like myself might have covered two or three counties, it now has allowed us to cover multiple states out of our Iowa office. So we're huge believers in technology and embracing that in what we do.
Yeah, they're doing a great job. Actually, I've had them on the show twice. I had them on beginning of last year after the land conference, and I think they were just in one state, and now they're in five or six and expanding, or seven or eight. I can't remember. But and they're not the only one. There are other sites out there, too, that's taking different map right. We use a lot. They've got a good program going, and one of my sponsors when I teach. But even the publications, Lands of America, Land Hub, the websites, this technology is moving us quicker and faster. And like you said, you can expand your territory. One of the things that we do is we actually put the aerial topo floodplain map on a 3x3 or 4x4 sign on the property with a QRC, and a person pulls up to the property, and now they can see what's for sale visually. They can go to the QRC, go right directly to the MLS, so now they know the information and the price. And then if we have the drone and GoPro, we'll put a QRC on that and actually have a land tour where we'll put the aerial map to the left and the picture to the right, but we have an arrow that actually moves around as the camera does and shows you exactly where you're on the farm. So we do listings 4 and 5 hours away from our office. Why do we need to be there? All the information's right there for a person. It's vacant land, and we sell a lot of business remotely just using the technologies that we've acquired and utilized. So.
That's incredible, yeah.
Our guest today, Stephen Brewer, this is Let's Talk Land. So part of your program, Steve, is this Ag Tech Accelerator that the People's Company joined three other investors to boost agricultural startups, such as Civilian Corridor, a program spearheaded by the Greater Des Moines Iowa Partnership. And your goal is to make it easier for college graduates and the very people whom so many low farm Iowa farmers will soon pass, because, you know, I'll be 70 next month, and it goes fast. But we got to help the younger generation. It sounds like you guys are making an effort to do that. Tell us about that, would you?
Yeah, we were invited to participate with some other major companies in these accelerators. There's two different accelerators. One was the Iowa Egg Startup Engine that was put together up at Iowa State University. And then the other one was the Greater Des Moines Partnership, which was a regional chamber here in Des Moines, launched an accelerator as well. And so we decided to invest in both of those accelerators, and it allowed us to get a little equity in some of these businesses that were coming out of these accelerators. It also allowed us to meet a lot of young entrepreneurial people that were developing new business ideas. And then it also allowed us to figure out how we could take some of these new technologies and incorporate them into our brokerage or management or appraisal process and whatnot. So it's been an excellent experience for us to meet these folks and see what young people are doing. I think you may know one of the groups that came out of the Iowa Egg Startup Engine was Steve Broches.
Yeah,
he may
Steve,
have been
sure.
on your show.
He actually has been on twice.
Okay, with Farmland Finder. And,
right.
and so, you know, rather than being afraid of technology, you know, we've chosen to embrace it. That's really the extent of it. It's pretty exciting to see young entrepreneurs succeed.
You know, you've got, you know, with the technology, with the drones and Google Earth and artificial intelligence, which is kind of scary in a way. You know, things are moving fast. I mean, it's, I don't know where we're going to be in the next 10 years from where we are today. You know, all this relates to food again. We're back to feeding the population, you know, 9 billion expected by 2050. I mean, that's 30 years from now. A lot of resources is going to be used, and if we don't protect our assets and be prudent with it, you know, we're going to have a hard time taking care of the world's population, and then beyond 2050 where it's going. So, you know, thanks for what you guys are doing, and, you know, AcreValue and AgriData, that's another great group out there. I haven't talked with them yet, but, you know, they're helping facilitate our industry making availability of what's for sale and what's sold and comps, and it's just so much easier. I mean, when I started years ago, you know, you go to the mapping office and go to the filing cabinet and pull out the index card for the property owner to get the map number, and then they would go to a rack that had a Mylar, and they would pull that particular sheet out and laminate it to a yellow sheet and run it through a black light, and then you'd have a 2-foot by 3-foot map of, you know, and sometimes if the property was in more than one section, then you may have 2 or 3 maps. And then I had an office with a big window, and I'd come back and take the Corps of Engineers topo map and tape it to the window and overlay the blueprint of the aerial and take a pencil and draw the contour lines. I mean, you know, that was I think we don't have to do that anymore.
You know, I was just kind of meeting with all of our young folks a month ago and was explaining to them what I used to have to go through to get a soil map. And you'd drive to the county NRCS office, they'd hand you the book, you had to get in there and figure out within this topo map where your farm was, and then we'd use colored pencils to create your own soil map. And today I can pull that same soil map in about 20 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
And I was on a cruise with my family last fall, and I got an email from a client in Denver that asked about a farm in Michigan, and you know, next day we had somebody over there with a drone. We pulled comps from AcreValue. We put an electronic proposal together for them and sent them a proposal that, you know, 16 years ago would have taken me 3 weeks to put together. And we turned it around in a day from a cruise ship. So
yeah.
It's amazing what technology does for you. And I'll tell you, on our management business, we manage farms for absentee landowners. And we started using company called Egg Solver that can produce these profitability maps. And
yeah, I've seen that too.
Pardon me?
No, I've seen that too. That's go ahead and tell about it, but it's quite a system
yeah.
they've got.
Yeah, you can pull profitability maps and start to look at a sub-acre scale of how much your farm's making. And what we realized is that 10 to 15% of every farm field that we were managing wasn't making money. And once you start to understand where you're losing money on your farm, then you can start to figure out how to fix it. And maybe it means more drainage tile, or maybe you need to look at an alternative management practice like CRP, or maybe it's a prescription planting or fertility plan. But technology is really changing the way our industry works. And you'd think, gosh, how can a real estate company take advantage of technology? And it just seems like every day there's some new way to leverage it to make ourselves better.
Is there anything that you've observed here recently that's coming online that we might want to talk about? Any secrets out there, or new technologies or approaches or new companies you might could name? Or are you guys aware of anything currently in the works?
You know, we use AcreValue every day. We're using Farmland Finder. One of the new ones that's popped up that is doing online farmland leasing called Tillable. I don't know if you're following those folks.
No, I haven't.
Probably the big thing that I think is probably coming next is the blockchain technology.
Yep.
I think you'll see some farmland transactions happen over blockchain before too long. And I think that'll tie back to the following the food supply chain, and consumers want to know how their food was produced and where it came from, and I think you'll start to see that happen sooner rather than later using blockchain.
Yeah, we did a show on blockchain. That's fascinating, and it's really catching on of how you can put a group of people together. That's something the guy we interviewed in Brazil, they're using because they're looking for international investors. They have a little bit more favorable government down there now, and they're investing in the rail system to move produce quicker and faster and cheaper, and there's a lot of good things going on down there. So that was one of the things that we talked about. We actually did a show on blockchain and what it is and how it works, and it's catching on pretty well.
Yeah, it's a global world we live in now, and you've got to pay attention to all the trends because you could wake up one day and find yourself out of business if you aren't keeping up with it.
That's right. Are we seeing the big corporations still gobbling up the smaller guys, or is that kind of slowed down now?
You know, I've always felt that was probably more overblown than what people really think it is.
Okay.
There's great data in Iowa on who buys farmland, and what I'm observing in Iowa is pretty consistent with what I see in these other states. Farmers buy about 80% of all the land that sells. And, the cap rate on Iowa farmland right now is about 2.8.
Wow.
And so you've got all this major institutional capital out there that would love to own a piece of Iowa farmland, but the returns are so low,
right,
where they're competing with farmers, that they just really, even if they could get in, we have corporate farming laws in Iowa that prohibit corporations from owning farmland that aren't authorized family farming corporations. And we also have foreign ownership restrictions here.
Yeah.
And the farmers are the predominant buyers. They're in the best position to make money off of the farm, and I just don't see as much of that corporate movement as a lot of people might think there is.
Let's talk about your appraisal side of your business a little bit. You guys are just a traditional appraisal firm, or you got some secrets or some techniques that you apply? Because, I wrote a class for the North Carolina Board of Appraisers. If you're an MAI, you have to be a realtor, dual designation. And, of course, there's no land education for them either. And it was called Rural Land Values. Is it an art or is it science? Along with one of my MAI buddies, we wrote it together, and I did the land part, and he did the – it was a four-hour seminar, and he did the appraisal part. And as we would go through all these unique things like sinkholes and what's the effect of a hurricane and flooding like you're having, golly, unbelievable, through the middle part of the country. And how does that affect land values? Because you're changing soils, you're changing water flow. And then you got all the buildings and, so is it an art or is it a science? And it's really both. And it's just an opinion, as I teach. The value of something is really what somebody's willing to pay. You got tax values, you've got real estate CMAs, current market analysis, you've got the full appraisers, you've got the next door neighbor. You got all these different values of a piece of property. Are you guys, you kind of see that too, I'm sure.
appraisal profession's highly regulated, and so I think your first question was around, you know, are we doing anything real special on the appraisal side? And an appraisal is kind of an appraisal. You follow your use path guidelines and whatnot.
Right.
And so it's hard to get terribly exotic with what we do on the appraisal side of the business. But we're huge believers in being proactive on collecting the data. And appraisers are looking back at sales and taking comps and using those to complete their appraisal. And one of the things that we're doing, we're only doing this in Iowa right now, but we track every transaction that happens in Iowa on a weekly basis. And so every week I get a report of how many farms sold, what they sold for, what the price per CSR point was. And so if somebody calls us for an appraisal, we've got a great appraisal database that's all of our appraisals are loaded into a map-based system where we can drill down and see them from Google Earth, and then we can see where they're at in relation to other listings that are on the market or maybe other farms that we manage. And so, again, it's just incorporating technology into that appraisal process and just making ourselves better at it. And it's been very useful to track on a quarter-by-quarter basis what things are selling for by county in the state of Iowa. And then we can track how many listings company has versus some of our competitors might have as well.
Gotcha. Where are you seeing land prices? I know over the years going to the real estate RLI conventions, which I've attended, golly, maybe 15 years worth of my 20-some years, maybe a little more. But I know back in the early 2000s, you know, the farm prices in your area, you know, $1,000 an acre, and then the funny money came out. Next thing you know, the next year you'd come back and the same farms are selling or auctioning for $4,000 and $5,000, and, you know, a couple years later you'd come back and now the same farms are selling for $18,000 and $20,000. And then 2014, the commodities market fell out the roof, and things started going back the other way. Where are we now?
Yeah, land values have, you know, they peaked in Iowa in 2013, and then they came off their peak probably about 20% or so. But they've kind of leveled out here, and you know, there's a lot of things going on right now. Interest rates are low. You've got the impact that we've had extreme weather this year. And then you've got the tariff issue impacting soybean farmers particularly hard. And yet the farmland values have remained really resilient, and they haven't dropped off to the degree that a lot of people thought they might. And one of the factors is there's just such limited inventory for sale, and then there's so much money out there chasing so few of assets. And, you know, this is just some back-of-the-envelope math for you, but if you lower your rental rate on your farm by $50 an acre, and then you lower your return expectation, say, instead of saying, I want a 3.5% return, I'll accept a 3% return now. So you lower your cap rate expectation by 50 basis points. You could drop rent by $50. It just drops your return by 0.5%. And so what's happened with all this capital that wants to own farmland and such limited amount of inventory, values just haven't fallen off to the degree that a lot of people thought that they might. And so I think most people that are buying farmland are buying it for the long term. And we're in a lower, commodity price environment right now, but people are still bullish long term about owning farmland.
Yeah.
And so far it's held in there. I don't know, with these tariffs and whatnot, how much longer we can hold the line on that. But right now values are pretty resilient.
Yeah. Well, you know, and of the states that you're in, are there any that's outperforming in terms of you seeing acceleration in values, or any that are depreciating in the 22 states you're in?
Gosh, that's a pretty broad thing to think about.
Sorry about that.
there's because you get into some of these states like Florida, and of course the citrus industry is going through turmoil right now. There's a disease called citrus greening. Killing a lot of the citrus trees down there. And so there's going to be a lot of citrus farms that come out of citrus production. And we just handled a sale of 2,900 acres in Florida that was an old citrus farm that's going to actually be turned into corn. And they're going to grow silage for some dairies around Lake Okeechobee there. And so there's some real pressure on citrus values, but then there's the new opportunity of producing a different crop in those areas. I'd mentioned the hemp thing. There's There's a lot of groups out there looking for land that they can grow hemp on, industrial hemp for CBD oil. So that's creating a lot of opportunity. Then you're seeing the organic movement. And there's some real geographic differences on where you can capitalize on the organic movement. And even from a crop insurance point of view, where you can insure your organic pricing in different regions better than you can in others. So there's a lot of disparity. You get into Washington State, where we do a lot of business. They grow 99 different crops up there. They have hops and blueberries and apples and grapes and corn and soybeans and you name it, they can grow it. And so when you have these commodity cycles like we're having now, it usually impacts all your crops, but it definitely impacts permanent crops differently than it does row crops. And that's the beauty of diversity. And so to singly call out a state and say, this is one that's booming or this is one that's hurting, the lower commodity price environment's kind of affecting them all, but in different ways, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. And we are in that, transition right now, like you said, with the tariffs and so on, which I don't want to get into that, but it is having a direct effect. But it seems like the government's trying to support the farmers too. So, there's a balance there. And I'm sure that'll work out, hopefully, in favor of all of us. But it's interesting to hear about what's going on around the country. And you're a perfect person to discuss that. I wanted to talk about your white paper. Tell us a little bit about that. You and Dr. Michael Duffy, who's Professor Emeritus for Economics at Iowa State University. How'd that get started, and what was the thesis of that?
Yeah, we were having a lot of folks that were interested in investing in farmland. A lot of this came out of the 08 financial crisis when folks started looking for alternative investments. And you started to have this conversation about how do we feed, a billion people by 2050, and we got to double the food production and whatnot. And you had all these environmental issues. We talked about the water quality one earlier. And I just started to see these competing pressures of how do we feed all these people, but then how do you do it in a manner where you protect the environment and you do it sustainably? And again, we're in the middle of this where my family farms, but then we also manage farms for clients that have a major emphasis on conservation and sustainability. And then we're working with a lot of these investment groups on the East Coast and West Coast that have these mandates. And so we decided to put a white paper together and kind of capture some thoughts around how do you do this? How do you, how do you keep people from starving but also feed this growing population? And it's a major burden on agriculture to figure out how to get this right.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was the premise of the white paper, and to demonstrate to some of the folks that are critical of agriculture that it's not an easy problem to solve. And if you solve one problem, you might create another one somewhere else.
Yeah, that's true. What's Dr. Michael Duffy's background?
He is a well-known figure. He published the Iowa Land Value Survey for, 30 or 40 years. He's since retired.
I'm familiar with that.
He was the economics professor at Iowa State that published that report, and very well-known in the industry and on the speaking circuit. And so he helped put together a lot of the data around land values and their historical returns. He was a big driver for us in that white paper.
Gotcha. Have you done any other things like that, or written a book, or contemplating it?
No books. We did publish another white paper on succession planning. These numbers come from Iowa State, from Mike Duffy's department. But 60% of the land in Iowa is owned by somebody 55 or older. And so there's a major succession planning coming, or succession issue coming. And I talked about that $224 billion worth of farmland in Iowa at the beginning of the show.
Right.
So when you think about over half of that land will trade hands over the next 20 years in some form or fashion. And so how do you do that responsibly? How do you plan for that? And I know my family's going to have to think through that. And so there's, it's going to change the landscape depending on how that gets done. And so That white paper has been very useful. It goes through some of the war stories of families that have done it right and have some that have done it wrong, and helps families kind of think through it. So often we see great, great families that got along and loved each other dearly, and then there's a death in the family, and next thing you know, there's a war over who owns what, and Dad said he wanted me to own this, and the whole idea is to encourage people to develop a plan for how they're going to handle those transition issues. And, yeah. You know, we're trying to spur some more of that planning, because so often we get involved when things go wrong. And, you know, it's a transaction for us, but it makes you sick to watch some of these families get torn apart.
We have the same thing here. In fact, part of the services that we offer is we'll do a estate plan. Person comes in and buys, you know, we don't have the big acreage here because we're one of the oldest, you know, the East Coast, you know, was settled first. Like in my family, we've got right around 900 acres that my great-grandfather and grandfather between 1909 and 1929 bought 18 farms, non-contiguous, but all in the immediate area with 10 children. And, of course, we're almost five generations now passing that down, broken up as granddaddy and his will broke it up, and every inch of that's still in the family. Had a dairy farm granddaddy did for many, many years, and then my uncle took it over at his demise, and then the grandsons took it over, and they said, no, we ain't doing this anymore, so now they got 12 chicken houses. I see this in real estate all the time, and one, like I said, one of the services that we offer, and for free, by the way, is you know, when a person buys the tract of land from us, we'll do a highest and best use based on their plans. They got three children, two children, five children, you know, whatever their future plans are, and go ahead and break that property up equitably based on accessibility and topography and assets and so on, and, you know, have something for them that they can put back. And, you know, laws don't really change that much. We have a 10-acre rule here in this area. As long as you say 10 acres or more, you don't have to get the government involved. So kind of use that as a basis. But, you know, we try to look for the future, too. It's not buying land. We always teach, how do you sell it? You know, what's the assets? People say you can't make money with land. Well, you and I both know that's a fallacy. You know, timber in our area, you know, that's cash. So, you know, we want to make sure our investors know about that and how to liquidate it. And do you go to auction, or you just call up a logger, or, you know, there's a lot to it. So we try to cover the gamuts there, too. Just with about 5 or 6 minutes left here, what else you want to let the public know about your company and what you guys do and where you're going, and kind of give us
some... We're really excited about agriculture and the future of agriculture and farmland, and, you know, I'm clearly biased and whatnot, but
it's
the single greatest asset there is to own.
Totally.
And it's a joy to work with the asset class every day, and the people that you get to meet and the things you get to learn about. And you touched on this earlier, but everything starts with the land. And, you know, we've gotten involved in just such fascinating things through the years because of our connection with farmland, whether it's a wind turbine project or it's an ethanol project or it's Agrihood subdivision. You get to see some really interesting stuff and meet interesting people. And, you know, when people have achieved all else in life and they've got they've created huge net worths for themselves, they inevitably want to own a piece of farmland. And,
yeah.
And so, you know, you get to deal with some of the great entrepreneurs in the world and help them with their dream of owning farmland. And it's just a great business.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And like you said, it's some of it's hobby, but a lot of it's serious business. And we want to see more of that.
Yeah, it is. And that's what's been eye-opening for me, you know, growing up here in Iowa, being on a corn and soybean farm. And, you know, you get around the country, and it really opens your eyes. You learn things every day. You question, well, why are they doing this there, and could we ever do this here in Iowa? And it's fun to get around the country and meet people. There's been a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that have gone into developing the agricultural system that we have today that is really the envy of the world and feeds the world. And so Not only have we done that and have been successful at it, but I think the best years are ahead for agriculture with technology and you know, the consumer, I can't stress this food to fork movement enough, but the consumer now caring about agriculture and now caring about where their food comes from. And, you know, we're involved in several projects right now where, you know, the farmer is now putting their story on the label, the food label.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Whether it's bag chips or whatever it may be. And the consumer is fascinated with that. And when you go to some high-end restaurants, you'll see the name of the farm where the pork was raised or where the beef was raised. And it's pretty exciting time to be a part of that.
Absolutely. So leave us with about three things that we've talked about that you think is important about you and your company and our industry that we're in.
Yeah, so People's Company, you know, we talk about the four legs of the stool. We, you know, we manage farmland, we appraise farmland, we broker farmland, and then we help folks that want to invest in farmland, acquire it, and manage it on an ongoing basis. And we're in 22 states. What we've done is we've looked at the whole country and identified where all the major agricultural hotspots are, and we've intentionally set up our business to do work in those areas. And if you've got an interest in doing a farmland transaction, whether that you need help on an appraisal side or you need help with some succession planning issues on the farm management side, or if you want access to some of these organic conversion opportunities where you can convert your farm from conventional to organic, if it's a land transaction, we've got folks in our company that can help facilitate those. And we like to work on complicated projects and add value.
Yep, you guys obviously do a good job. And, it's great to know about you and your company. And I'm really pleased to share you and your experience on our show today. Tell us how people can get in touch with you.
Yeah, the best way to look us up is to get on our website. It's just peoplescompany.com. And we've got a lot of videos on there that you can watch and learn a little bit more about our firm and check out some of the properties that we're marketing. You can also call our 800 number. I stole something from you, Lou, but it's 855-800-LAND.
You didn't steal that one from me. You got that from the telephone company. But good for you. And how else can, what's your email address?
Yeah, my email address is just steve@peoplescompany.com.
Okay. Now, what we do is after the show is broadcast today, this morning, we'll download it on our website, which is www.letstalkland.net. And that's where we have all of our shows. I believe you're number 70. And then it's put down on Spotify and Podbean and for access. These podcasts everybody likes. But we want to give opportunity to anyone that wants to learn about land. Land education is so hard to get out there. And the purpose of this show is give people opportunity to, like yourself, talk about what you do and expand the horizon out there. You've been a great guest today. Look forward to meeting you in the future. Hopefully, once you guys get a calendar set for your conference coming up, hopefully I can join you and meet you in person. We have a lot in common. We have a lot of people that we know. And also, I encourage you, if there's anybody that you know that would be a good guest on our show, please let me know, and you're welcome to come on and be a co-host with Teresa and I, a tri-host, I guess it would be. We've got the professor, the student, and then the expert is the basis of our show. So thank you for joining.
I'd be happy to be the student anytime you'd like.
No, you're the expert. You're the expert. But thank you for joining.
I appreciate being on the show, and we're real active on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and so we'll do our best to spread the word on the show, and happy to send other folks your way.
Okay. Thanks for joining us today. Let us know how you like the show. If you have any guests or topics that you'd like to suggest, we'd appreciate them. All questions are welcome, and all of our guests may be emailed with your questions or concerns as well. This show is for the public and, most importantly, for our real estate agents who do not have a source for land education. Like I said, all of our shows are downloaded on www.letstalkland.net. on Podbean, Spotify, Facebook, and so on. My email is Lou, L-O-U, at mylandpro.com. My cell number is 336-669-1405. Roddy, how do they get to us here?
They can go to our website, go to WKTE1090.com, or you can download the Simple Radio app and tune us in anywhere in the world.
Thank you again. Thanks, Dave.